Hey, we got a special day for you, man. We are pumped about this morning. We have a special guest speaking today. Matt Kobe, if you could come on stage, please, my brother. Matt is going to be giving his testimony this morning. And we've just been praying and waiting and looking and just waiting for the right moment for Matt to be able to really preach his heart. And just he's going to speak to us this morning. He's going to preach this morning. And you know Matt doesn't need a major introduction. He's been in this church for many years. He'll tell his story. It's his story to tell. And Matt truly is one of my strongest friends and one of my closest brothers, and I love him dearly, and we have connected. The moment he showed up, we connected in just such a real way, and he'll talk on whatever he needs to talk on, but to have him in this morning and to have him here today and just be able to present truth, we're excited about it, man. We're pumped about it. And, you know, when you come to a place to understand what it means to live thankful. And it's on purpose that he preaches today, the week before Thanksgiving. And just to know what it means to live a life, to live thankful. Not just be thankful, not just for this week be thankful, especially on Thursday, but what it means to go through life and to live thankful. There's a difference from just being thankful because it might be circumstantial, in order to what it means to really live thankful. And Matt is head deacon in this church, and we are so pumped about all. His hands are in so many arenas in this church, so many arenas. And he's touched so many of you in so many ways in this church. And I'm just telling you, I'm just so pumped about Matt having this opportunity to share his heart today to this church. And he's spent hours in preparation, which I love. Takes a lot to be up here. And I appreciate Matt so much and the time that you put into this. And I know you have. And it's exciting. Give me some love.
Love you, brother.
Whoa. Amen. Let me pray. Father, I thank you for today. I thank you for this service. I thank you for our time in worship. God, we want to honor you in this place. You're the star of the show in this place, Lord. Nobody else. You're the star. We're here to acknowledge you. So, Father, bless my friend Matt as he presents your word. He presents his story, that it would bless all of us, God, that we walk out of this place full this morning, full of hope, full of being encouraged, being built up, and God, that we would learn what it is to live thankful. Father, thank you for Matt. Bless his family. Thank you for Lori and the girls. Encourage them and strengthen them. God, I just pray that your word would penetrate hearts today. In Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Come on, brother.
Thank you, brother. I'm laughing right now because I asked Nate if he would grab the table. Poor Nate. And last week, Nate had a little situation with water, in which case he threw a case of water in front of Sean. And this week, I said, Nate, would you grab the table? And I'm kind of motioning to him, like, not yet, not yet. And then Adam walks over and steals the table from him. Nate, I love you, man. You want to start over? We'll just take it over there. I love you, Nate. Sean, thank you so much. It's an honor. It's a privilege, certainly, to be here. Renee, thank you. I know this has been on your heart for some time now, and thank you for being a great coach and a great leader to me, a great friend to me. And man, this is just a very, very special day indeed. There's actually been just one verse that's really been kind of on my heart, honestly, for the last couple of months, Psalm 9:1, and it says, I will give thanks to you, Lord, with all my heart, and I will tell of all of your wonderful deeds. And as I just prayed on that and meditated on that, and you just think of the word wonderful deeds, a question came to my heart, and that was, what happens when those wonderful deeds that we can look back on, that were God's wonderful deeds, but they might have been bumps in our own road. They might have been valleys. They might have been things we were going through at the time that was painful, that seemed like it was going to last forever. But when we look back on them now, as I look back on them now, they're wonderful deeds. And honestly, I'm just here today to share my story, to share my story. It includes, of course, my wife and my girls, but ultimately it's my history. But as you can see, it's his story. And we all have our history. And we all have his story in our lives. And man, we're so blessed for it. And I'm blessed to be here today. I love you guys. I was just looking around the room this morning just before coming up here. And I couldn't think of a better place to be on a Sunday morning than with you. And it's a special, special opportunity. Kind of down memory lane a little bit. I want you guys to do something for me. I want you guys to think back and think of the very first sermon you attended at Believer's Chapel. I mean, for Sean, Renee, and maybe some of you, Lenny and Jenny, sometimes some of you, that was in their living room 10 years ago. Literally, your seat might have been on a couch or on a stairwell if you're one of the Obergefells. crazy. Maybe it was in the park when they outgrew their house and they had to move to the park just for a summer. And maybe your first service was bringing a lawn chair to a church, which is crazy, right? And I'm sure a lot of you guys, right, here today, this is maybe your first service. Or maybe you've come here just in the last year and a half to 2 years since we've bought this building, done an amazing job with so many amazing, talented people. And maybe this is the place where your first service took place. For me, honestly, personally, it goes back almost 6 years ago. We moved here from Colorado, and our first service was the weekend after the 4th of July weekend in 2013, and I can remember it. It was like 89 degrees, and if you guys remember BC West, that deck was incredibly hot after services. I remember walking up on the porch, and my wife had already kind of called Sean ahead of time and told him we were coming and kind of trying to find a church for us in the area. I remember walking up and just shaking his hand and just being like, wow, who is this guy? You know, full of energy and just giving me a hug like he already knew me. And I remember walking in the foyer, just full of just smiles and joy and people who didn't even know me, but were just happy to see me and to meet me. And I still see that today, and we're so blessed by so many amazing people. I actually remember the first words Sean spoke from the altar. The first words as I'm sitting, and I remember I was just kind of off here to my left and to the right as you're walking in, and I remember sitting there, and I just remember the first words that Sean spoke that spoke to me. I mean, I still today get goosebumps over these words, and I can hear it. It's like a clear voice, and it sounds like this. The Pittsburgh Steelers are God's team. I'm serious. I mean, right? You're feeling it. Like, Ben Roethlisberger, you're right there. Big Ben, I see another Big Ben. Like, goosebumps. And I mean, like, I'm looking at my wife, and I'm like, are you kidding me? And she's looking at me like, are you kidding me? Like, but you got to know something, guys. I was born in 1972, and in 1969, I had an older cousin who was a left tackle at Oklahoma State University. His name's John Kolb. And John was blessed to have been drafted by the Rooney family. He was drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he was drafted to protect Terry Bradshaw's blind side, and he did that for over a decade, won 4 Super Bowls with him, competed in a couple World's Strongest Man competitions. So if you're trying to put the connection together with a physique, like, now you got it. Like, it's just, you got it now, right? But the Pittsburgh Steelers story, guys, has always been an amazing, amazing intro for me. It really has. I was born to an amazing set of parents. Unfortunately, they divorced shortly after I was born, and my dad moved to Florida. But man, my mom worked so hard for me. We bounced around a lot. I think there were 6 elementary schools in my hometown of Ashland, Ohio, which is about 4 hours from here. And I think of the 6 elementary schools, I went to 5 of them in the first 5 years. So kindergarten through 5th grade, lots of new friends. But I can tell you, every single one of them, when I'd walk in a room and they'd see my last name and they'd say, aren't you? Is John Kolb your? Yeah. And this is Cleveland Browns country, right? I mean, maybe you guys can like kind of like envision what that's like to live in a football world where you don't win very often. But listen, when you live in Cleveland, like, you don't win very often. And so when you're a Steeler, you stand out, right? And of course, I just had so many great friendships from that, and just blessed by so many amazing people that came to my life by the 5th or 6th grade. God was doing a work. I didn't know it. I did not have a relationship with Christ. I can tell you that growing up. But he had a plan, and he always put so many great people in my life. There was a community church there about the size of BC, and man, guys were taking me in. Dads were taking me in as one of their own, taking me on family vacations. Just a really special time. But again, Pittsburgh Steelers friends, and I still laugh about it today and my connection with Sean, but it's done so many great things for me. My mom remarried when I was 12 years old, just to a great man. He's still a great father figure to me. He's actually sitting in a deer blind about 3 miles from here because he had priorities today. But he's on his phone right now watching, and that's pretty cool. But it was great. And we had great values. I mean, growing up, we just loved to play football, loved to be in the woods, you know, just loved to just be a kid. You know, if you drank or you smoked or you didn't like that, as a group of friends, we were just kind of like, nah, that's just not our thing. And, you know, thinking about that as a parent now, what a blessing to know that my son is growing up in that culture. But again, a great Christian culture, a great group of people. And although I probably didn't attend church 2 or 3 times with them my whole life growing up, they just had great values that they instilled on me as people. And I'm blessed by them. Unfortunately, when it came time to choose college, we didn't have a lot of money growing up. And so getting a scholarship for athletics wasn't in my future. Academically, scholarships were not in my future. And so I chose the Ohio State University. It was close to home. I could come home and do my laundry, 50-minute drive. But it just made sense. It was a good school. It was local. And off I went in the summer of 1991. And it was a short, short chapter. I can just tell you this right now. Wrong people, wrong decisions. Ohio State University, if you look up the numbers, is an enrollment anywhere between 45 and 60,000 kids. From pharmacy schools to biology schools to med schools all the way through undergrad. My opening class introduction as a freshman, 3,500 kids. I graduated with like 280, so 3,500 kids. But it just didn't take long before I knew it wasn't going to work out. So the summer after my freshman year, I came home. I was struggling, and I made the next best decision, which was, well, join a fraternity. It'll get better. It didn't get better. And by the end of my first semester, sophomore year, my mom set me aside, and she said, it's time for a change. You gotta quit this. This isn't your lifestyle. It's time for you to leave. It's time for you to do something different. I think you should take a year off. And she did. She made the hardest decision as a parent, and she said to her son, I think you need to go and just follow a dream or a passion that you may have. Now, I grew up loving to ski. I know it sounds weird to ski in Ohio, but it's true. Just like loving to ski here, we've got great mountains. But my family friends I mentioned to you had taken me on a couple vacations. One of them was out west of Utah, and I just fell in love with the mountains. Fell in love with the mountains. So when she asked me, honestly, my first thought, I want to go to Colorado. I'd never been there. I'd never been to Colorado. Love the mountains. Love the commercials on TV. You know, you think about just the amazing mountains in Telluride and Vail and Aspen, all these great places. But I wanted to go to Colorado. So she did. She got me some job interviews, believe it or not. She got me a local newspaper, which I was able to read for a couple months before leaving. And I packed up my Honda Accord along with a 9-foot rug. I don't know why it is. You just feel like you should take a rug with you when you move. But I took a 9-foot rug all the way across the country. I had no money. I had a couple credit cards. I had no money. But I landed in Boulder with nobody to know, nowhere to stay. And within a couple weeks, I found a little cheap apartment. And I found myself living in Boulder, Colorado as a 20-year-old. Now, you got to know something about living in Boulder, Colorado. There are some rules. I call them rules. They're almost laws to living there. There's a dress code, right? You have to have Patagonia or North Face on your jacket. Everything you own has to be brand new. If it gets dirty, you throw it away. You don't wash it. You don't dry clean it. If it gets torn, you're kind of cool if you put a little duct tape on it, but it's got to be like designer duct tape, and then once that wears out, you just toss it, right? You got to have hobbies, and not just like one or two or three, but you have to have at least 6 hobbies, which you are evidently like seeking every single day that consume you. So, of course, it's like being on a cruise ship. You just check the box of the things you want to do, and I picked mountain biking and road biking and fly fishing and kayaking and mountain biking, and, of course, I picked skiing. But unfortunately, these were expensive hobbies, right? And so instead of just saving up, and of course I did have a job, instead of saving up and buying all these expensive toys so that I could look the part of being a Boulderite, right? I did what I thought was really smart. I got like a bunch of credit cards and I maxed them out like to live the lifestyle, right? This was amazing. It was like, I'll take that bike and I want that kayak. And I just had, it was unbelievable. I was just living the dream, right? And actually I had a pretty good paying job. Right, I got involved in real estate, which became a passion of mine, and just kind of started to see some things. But I started to see some things in relation to how debt can really be a friend, and I'll put that in quotations to you. The age of 22, I bought my first house. I was working for a mortgage brokerage firm, bought my first house, had all these amazing fancy toys, had an old cool FJ40 Land Cruiser, if you guys know the old Toyota Land Cruiser. So I mean, like, I felt like I was a postcard for living in Boulder, being a young kid. I re-enrolled at the University of Colorado. That was a big part of the decision to go to Boulder, was there was a university there. So here I am back in school, right? All these toys. We got a cool, good-paying job. Own a house. I had a job working for Vail part-time. Ski passes were expensive. They still are. But when you have to pay $3,500 for a ski pass, you get another job. And so I got a job working for Vail. Led me to work in this little ski shop one night in cold November, 21 years ago, this last Wednesday, this most beautiful woman in the world walked in the door. Now, unlike Sean and Renee, whose story we know, where they're at Edinburgh, and Sean walks into a party, and there's like a glow around his head, and Renee like floats over to him, and she's like, will you marry me? You know, like, we hear Sean tell the story. Like, it's an amazing story. it didn't go that well for me. In fact, my like my sense of humor and my wit, sarcasm, didn't sit well with Lori. And so she came in to get a part for her ski rack. She was going up to the mountains to ski, and she kind of looked at me and waved, and she walked out the door. The very next night, it was like a minus 10 degrees in November in Boulder, super cold night, and we both happened to actually just be at this little pool hall. We both love playing pool. And I saw her, and I walked right up to her, and I said, "Hey, you left before I could ask you on a date." And she said, "You know what? If I would have known that, I would have stayed." And from that day, it's a great story. I love my wife, and so it's just a great, it's a great line. I mean, let's just be honest. That was a great line, right? Let's just be honest, guys. That was a great line. But it worked, and man, we had just such a fun adventure together. We first started dating. We just had so many passions. We loved to cycle together and just backpack together. We went overseas together to Europe. We just did so many amazing things, and then we bought our first house together. And that's when, as a couple, we started seeing, as I mentioned, kind of the power that you can get from leveraging property. So again, this is just real estate. So at the time, we're just kind of figuring this out. We didn't have much money. We both had good paying jobs, but of course you go and get a loan at the time. You could borrow 97% of a house's value and put a couple thousand down and buy a $300,000 house. But that was just normal. It's what everybody else was doing. But we had some good times. And so of course, as a couple, the six hobbies that we shared collectively weren't enough. So we took on triathlons together. Now, if you guys aren't familiar, triathlons are simple. You wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you drive to a really freezing cold lake, you jump in that lake for like 30 minutes, you get kicked in the head about 50 times by people, you jump out of the cold lake, you jump on a bike, you can't feel your legs or any other part of your body, and you sit on an uncomfortable seat and you ride around for like an hour or so, and then you jump off your bike and then you go run, and sometimes they'll give you like a cup of soup or something along the way, and you come back. And the payout's huge. It's huge. It's like you get a t-shirt and a cold slice of pizza, and you just want to do it again and again and again. And so I did, and we did. And we just started training, and we had so much fun. She will joke that she was faster than me, and she was definitely a better swimmer than me. But we had a lot of fun with it. But I wanted more. It's always the thing, right? You have these adventures. You have these things, whether it's the houses and whatnot. I wanted more. So I signed up for my first Ironman triathlon. Now, the Ironman triathlon is, again, it's a triathlon, but it's a little different. It's 2.4 miles of a swim. It's 112 miles on a bicycle, and you get off the bicycle, and then they make you run a marathon, which is 26.2 miles. But the payout is much, much bigger. You get a sweatshirt and a burrito, and the burrito's hot. It's like a Chipotle burrito. And so if that doesn't make you want to do an Ironman right now, I don't know what does. But of course, I said to my wife, because you have to sign up a year in advance, I was like, "Babe, we're doing this together." And she's like, "I'm not doing it." I'm like, "Please tell me you have a good excuse." She's like, "I'm pregnant." I'm like, "Wow, that's a good excuse." So I went off and I did my first Ironman by myself. My wife toted around our young Adeline, less than a year old, following me all over the race course, cheering me on with sweatshirts and signs and all the stuff they had made. And it was fun. But I wanted more. So this time I wanted Hawaii. Hawaii is the championship. If you qualify for Hawaii, which basically I did my first Ironman in like 12 hours. If you do it sub-10.3, so under sub 10 hours and 30 minutes, you get to go to Hawaii. And there you get to get kicked in the face by a bunch of people in salt water. And the payout's way bigger because you get a medal and a burrito and a sweatshirt. So, I mean, the payout just keeps bigger and bigger as you go. So I went to my wife. I said, "All right, you had a good excuse the first time. Tell me you have an excuse not to do another Ironman with me." She's like, "Actually, I have two good excuses. I'm pregnant with twins." Man, she just kept upping her game, like literally just kept upping her game every time. But I knew I needed to do something different. If I was going to compete at Ironman level and go to Hawaii and do those things, I had to up my game. And so at the time, I was a real estate agent. I just become a real estate agent, got my license, started representing clients, was really kind of getting into it as a family. We started doing fix and flips, which we started buying houses and leveraging ourselves once again and fixing them up and selling them, putting everything we had on the line. But we were doing it. We were living the Boulder dream. We leveraged my first townhouse I told you I bought, and we bought a townhouse up in Vail, Colorado. So we were spending our weekends with friends in Vail, coming home. I'm a real estate agent, Ironman guy, working to be another Ironman guy, and Lori and I are just feeling blessed. But I knew I needed to up my game for training. So as a realtor, I decided not to drive in my car for like 6 months. I was going to ride my bike wherever I went. I was going to train. I was going to get super fit, super fast, and I was going to go to Hawaii. So I did. I just started showing up for clients on bikes. And I'd ride ahead of them sometimes. They'd drive and I'd ride my bike. And keep in mind, this is Boulder, Colorado. They do give you tickets if you drive your car. So they want you out of your car. They want you on bicycles or on, you know, footpaths or whatever. And so I basically just started riding my bike everywhere. And one night I'm in my basement and I'm just going through my notes for the next day. And these words came to me. And I walked up, my wife was giving our kids a bath, and I said, pedal to properties. And she's like, that makes no sense. And I was like, no, it does. Pedal to properties. This is a great idea. I could start a real estate company where all we do is offer clients a privilege to ride around on bicycles. And it's a whole new way to see a community. It's a whole new way to see an area they might be moving to. And she was like, it's brilliant. Let's do it. So once again, we leveraged everything. I started a little business downtown Boulder. We had bikes at some of the hotels with our names and our signs on it, right? We were doing it. We were starting this little business together. Our kids were young. They had their own little cruiser bikes. I had, again, a few agents working for me, and I started to get some pretty decent press. And the press was first magazines and some newspapers. I started getting interest from places around the country who wanted to do the same thing. And then I got a magazine. And I remember it showed up, and it was in a box, and it was highlighted, and it was by Entrepreneur. And the title of the magazine just said, Top 100 Business Ideas. And I was like, huh, this looks cool. It's highlighted, and there's a sticky note. So I flipped to the sticky note, and right there under Aspen Ski Resort for some crazy cloud seeding program they had started where they could make snow whenever they wanted it, it said, pedal to properties, Boulder, Colorado. And I was like, this is a joke. Like, I've got lots of buddies who love to play practical jokes, and they're really super talented. They could make a whole magazine with my name in it just to fool me. None of my buddies did it. It turns out it was true. They had picked me up as some idea that was just riding bicycles around town on cruiser bikes. But it turns out there were a bunch of communities at the time who were trying to go green and do something different, and realtors saw it as a way to think outside the box a little bit, right? Get some notoriety in a community, a crazy crowded market. And then my phone rings. It's not 2 hours later. At the time, I had a client. He was in town. He had just sold a business in Australia. He netted $35 million from the sale of his business. And he called me up, and he said, looks like the price just got higher. He was just my client. I was helping him buy a house. Like, I don't know what you mean. He goes, I want to partner with you. I think we can take this thing around the world. I think we can franchise the idea. I want to meet you tomorrow. I'm bringing an attorney. I want to be your partner. And I want to franchise Pedal to Properties. So I go home, and I tell my wife, and I'm just like, it's happening. Like, all the hard work and all the risk-taking and all that, it's happening. So we do it. We partner. And my business partner buys a huge building downtown, millions of dollars, in exchange for some money to buy into my company. He gives us some real estate property in South Bend, Indiana, where the Notre Dame is. We own 13 houses in Notre Dame. With all in, like, in 2 weeks, we own houses in Notre Dame, right? We've got this crazy corner building with our name all over it. I get a call from the mayor, and she says, hey, HGTV's coming to town. They want to promote one realtor in our community, and we want that person to be you. Now, most realtors, like, beg HGTV to get on there. Like, they want to be on House Hunters. It's a big deal. And if you're still up at 4:30 in the morning every 18 weeks, you can probably still watch me on House Hunter. But I got on House Hunter. I was asked by Discovery Channel to be on another episode. Again, just based on this little quirky idea of riding around on bikes. It was unbelievable. It was a crazy journey. We were on private jets to Vegas. My business partner was making promises to both of us. Within a year, you guys will be millionaires. We started looking at million-dollar farms. We did. We just started looking at properties. We didn't have hardly any money in our bank, of course, because it was still going to the business. But we started looking at these amazing properties because we knew it was going to happen. Lance Armstrong was, I'll say it, an idol of mine. An idol of mine. Every single one of his Tour de France races, I watched every single one of them. And it was my dream to go and ride and just watch him. So in the summer of 2010, his last Tour de France with the Radio Shack team, I took a couple buddies. I flew to France, and on the Pyrenees Mountains, we basically stood, and we watched Lance Armstrong. It was amazing. And we came back after 2 weeks, and I came into my office after hugging my wife and going right to the office, and I had a letter. And the letter said, Matt, after much consideration, I now realize that our business venture is not what I want to do. The idea isn't as big as we thought. And we have two options. We can shut the business down right now, or you can pay me $1 million and I'll walk away. There's a terminology sometimes you'll hear people say, which is called lawyer up, right? I don't know what that means. But when you got like 30-some million dollars, you can lawyer up real quick. My wife and I hired an attorney, and for a year, we fought. We fought to get what was ours back because it was our idea. This guy came in, took us to this place, and then literally just walked away. At the end of about a year, we had leveraged again everything. We had family who backed us, who said, I don't want this guy to take this from you, and I'm backing you. I'll take my 401k, and I'll give it to you guys. I'll take my retirement, and I'll help you guys. So we came to an agreement after about a year, but by then I was done. I was tired. I was exhausted. The real estate market wasn't doing well. And I checked myself into a hospital. I was convinced I was having a heart attack. About a week later, Lori said, there's a church down the road. I think we should go. Again, I didn't have a relationship with Christ, guys. They had this sign. I used to ride next to this church all the time. They had these giant billboards that they would hand paint. And for a month, I'd ride by, and the particular sign said, God allows U-turns. That's a cool sign. So we went. And I picked up the bulletin, right at the top, first verse, 2 Chronicles 7:14. If my people who were called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven, I will forgive their sin, and I will heal their land. Now, that didn't really resonate with me, honestly, at the time, but the sermon did. I joke about John's Pittsburgh Steelers first speech, so to speak. There's so many sermons Sean has spoken to me that just touch my heart. But this one in particular was about a young man who had everything. He had his father's love. He had money. He had a future inheritance. He had security. He had it all. But it wasn't enough. And so he decided to take what was rightfully his and go off to the distant far land to make a bigger, better life. A bigger, better dream, right? Only he ended up in a pig pen. Now, I raise pigs. A pig pen is not where you want to be at all. But while he was in that pig pen, he had a revelation. And he basically said, this was the wrong path. I'm going to go back to my father, and I'm going to tell him, I've sinned against you. I'm sorry. I'll be the lowest person in our household, below the slaves. You guys probably recognize this story. It's the prodigal son. And it was the first sermon I heard in the exact day that I accepted Christ as my Savior. The next 6 months were a blur. I put away the real estate gig. I was done. I started like building chicken coops and like doing fix-it-up stuff for friends just to make some money. I was in every single thing that church offered. I was in it. FPU class, Financial Peace University, I was in it. In fact, it's great that I remember the first FPU class, and this Proverbs was put up on, it was put up in the first 5 minutes, first FPU class, Proverbs 23. Don't wear yourself out to get rich. Don't trust in your own cleverness. Cast but a glance at riches and they're gone. For they will surely sprout wings and fly off to the sky like an eagle. That was me. I wore myself out to get rich, right? It all seemed to make sense at the time. We were building a nice lifestyle for ourselves, but I wore myself out to get rich. I ended up in a hospital bed. I gave my life to Christ, and everything I did after that minute changed. Now, this wasn't an easy time in our lives. I'm going to tell you this was the hardest time in our lives. Real estate market had tanked. Every house we owned in South Bend, Indiana was worth less than the tax roll on that house. We gave every one of them back to the city of South Bend. Gave it to them. Half of them they tore down, they built a park. The other, they waited for the market to come back, sold to investors for additional fix and flips, and we were just on the losing end. We used to have fancy cars. We loved to lease expensive cars. That's what you did. You just leased a car. And when you're done leasing a car, you just turn it in and they give you another one. And it just comes with a new payment. I watched my wife's dream car drive away on a trailer. Called the bank. We don't want it anymore. We can't afford it anymore. Come get it. And we're like, well, it doesn't really work that way. Well, it's going to now. So they did. They showed up and they took it away. The business was pretty much gone. I signed it over. You can't technically sign over a business for free. So on the sale doc for me signing over Pedal to Properties to an agent who worked for me at the time, it says $1. I sold my business for $1. And in that same time, I was in scripture, and honestly, I can't tell you what I was reading, but my wife was again giving the girls a bath, and I walked in tears, and I said, honey, it's time to go home. Now, I'm from Ashland, so when I said it's time to go home, I meant here, but she knew. It was time to leave Colorado. It was time for a different life. So we did. We packed everything up in a camper, excuse me, in a semi-truck. They dropped off a semi-truck, and on a Wednesday, we were supposed to move to New York. We'd saved up a few grand. My wife is great at selling stuff. She sold almost everything we owned. I at one time had 500 cruiser bicycles. We used to manufacture bikes in China. We sold all kinds of stuff just to get here. And two nights before we moved to New York, my wife goes to Walmart to get a gift because we had a baby party to go to, a friend's party. And she comes home, she's like, my car didn't work. She has said that a lot in some of our seasons. My car didn't work. Huh. I'll call Dave. I had a personal banker, right? There's times in real life where you say, oh, well, I have a personal banker. It doesn't necessarily mean anything, folks. So I call him up. Hey, Dave, my wife's car doesn't work. Yeah, we know. Well, what do you mean? We took it. What do you mean you took it? Like we just emptied your bank account, Matt. Whatever you had in your account, we took it. I'm like, well, you can't do that, Dave. That's my money. He's like, no. See, that's where you're wrong. You signed all these dotted lines about how the properties and the business and all this and this and this. It was leveraged against you, you personally, your commitment, your signature. And we hear you're leaving town. We heard you sold the company. So we took it. We have a semi-truck in our driveway, and we have 0 cents to our name. So like most good parents, you put a smile on your face and you go to the party. And you guys got to understand something. Moving here, I still wanted to have the lifestyle. I knew that Ellicottville had mountain bike races every Tuesday night. And I owned a bicycle, and its name was Blaze. When you spend a bunch of money on bikes that only get made a handful of times a year, they name them. It's ironic that his name was Blaze. A guy walks up to me, doesn't even know we're moving. And he says, hey, you still have Blaze? Yeah. You want to sell it? No, I can't sell Blaze. I mean, think of all the fun things I can do when I get back to Colorado, to New York. So that night, it hit me. Dude, you don't have anything, Matt. If you're going to give your life to Christ, if you're going to give it all up, give it all up. So I called him up, 10 o'clock at night. Show up tomorrow. Shows up. Bag of money for a bike. Bag of money. Truck driver. No joke. We're going to New York. Getting here, guys, wasn't easy. We rented a house from family. We both worked kind of entry-level jobs just to pay the bills. We couldn't afford internet when we first got here in 2013, so we used to park next to BC West and like do business there. And Sean would bring us snacks. But he knew. He knew our story because we shared it with him, but most people didn't know our story. I'll just kind of flash forward now, just what's crazy, but flashing forward 6 years. I'm actually thankful for our finances now. Believe it or not, my net worth today is worth more than it was then. Your net worth is just what you own and subtract what you owe. Mine was a negative number. Now we own a farm. I can't afford farm equipment, so I borrow it, but I own a farm, and it'll just be paid off here in a few years. We buy simple cars to get us from A to B, and they work sometimes. But I'm thankful for this particular Proverbs, because this is when it changed for us, folks. Proverbs 3, 9 through 10. Honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of all your crops. Then your barns will be filled and overflowing. and your vats will brim over with new wine. Financial peace, guys, it taught me to do one thing. God spoke to me and said, do one thing first, give. And six years ago, we made that commitment. No matter what we've got, if it's zero, we're still giving first. If it's a buck, we're still taking it off the top. 10%, 10 cents, here we go. Folks, can I tell you, in the 6 years I've been here, I can count the number of times I've been with lack on one hand. And that's a real small number. That's a real small number. God, I'm thankful for our marriage. My wife is my best friend. I can't look at her right now because I'll lose it, but we battled together. Together. We've had some great journeys. We've gone through a war zone together, and we came out on the other side, and we're so much stronger. I'm thankful for my girls. They've endured a lot. I'm thankful for my friends. That's you guys. Most of our friends in Colorado, they don't even know we left. I spoke to one of them a couple months ago, and he goes, dude, where you been? It's like you vanished. I've been gone 6 years, brother. Yeah, we haven't hung out at all. No. But I have a whole new group of friends. They're friends. They don't love me for what I do or how fast my time splits are. They love me for me. They don't care about my truck, how old it is. They love my truck. It's Big Red. They don't care that I have Tyvek on my house right now or that I have literally insulation in most of my house with no drywall. I'm thankful for this church, to be asked to be a deacon, to be asked to be a project manager and lead a great group of people, to be asked for so many teaching opportunities and learning opportunities and men's groups and retreats. Best people on the planet. And as we just come into this Thanksgiving season, I look around and I'm like, no question. Recently, Sean and I have had an opportunity to go to Houghton College and lead a Proverbs group, which we do every few months. My Houghton brothers and sisters over here, go Highlanders. I never finished school. It always felt empty. So a year and a half ago, I enrolled at Houghton College. And after 17 classes, I graduate in 4 weeks. Go Highlanders. Don't wait till you're 46 years old to graduate college. It's really hard. My kids make fun of me because they know more than I do. Dad, you don't know how to do that? They're great tutors, great tutors. Guys, Wednesday's a big deal. This coming Wednesday's a big deal. Because it turns out our story, our history, is his story. And he's got a story for all of us. He's got a future for all of us. One of hope. I cannot wait to fill this place Wednesday. I cannot wait to hear your testimonies and just what God has done in your lives over this last year. I can't wait. It truly is an honor and a privilege to stand here today and just look around and realize we're all just on this journey together. And I appreciate you letting me share my story. I love getting to know you more, even if it just means you getting to know me and my wife and my kids a little more. Because it's a great story, and we're blessed by it. We truly are. Bumps in the road and everything. Hospital bed, financial failure, vehicle driving away on a truck. I'll take it, because I'm here today because of it, and that's the blessing. So thank you. Thank you again, Sean and Renee. Can't wait to see you guys Wednesday.
Hey, if you could just stand to your feet, please, for a minute. I just want to share this verse. We love Matt. Matt and Lori and the girls are just a part of this church in a real way, and just I love Psalm 141. It says this because, you know, life will take you on a journey. We all know that. And when you understand, journey is just a part of the training. And I learned that through police work. You know, to be a pastor, the absolute best training in the world was to be a cop. I didn't know that at the time. You know, when you're going through it, you don't know it at the time of what God has planned for you. But what happens when you know that you have a God who knows all things, and he knows your future, and he knows what you need to go through to get you where you need to be. Like, what happens if you buy into that truth? God knows what you need to go through in order to get you to where you need to be, right? And when you understand your journey in life, that's just training for what's ahead. And I love this verse, Psalm 141, verse 8 says this, For my eyes are towards you, O Lord. I love this. My eyes are towards you. Man, do we put our eyes on the bad of the journey? Do we put our eyes even at times on the good of the journey? Or do we put our eyes just simply on God? God, my eyes are towards you. That my focus is on you. The good, bad, and the ugly. You are still God. You will always be God. You can't be anything less. And my eyes are towards you. Watch this now. Oh God, the Lord, in you I take refuge. Refuge means shelter. In you, I come under your shadow. I come close to you. You see, if you're going to be under the shelter of God, if you're going to be under his refuge, you have to be close to God. And when you understand what it means that I am will take refuge in you, do not leave me defenseless. Do not leave me defenseless. I mean, even in Matt's journey and Matt and Lori and their story and just the seeing the up and the down and then to come home and to be a part of Allegheny, New York, to buy a farm. And that's just part of his story. He's just got such a deeper story, and it's so good. It's such a great story. And then to see where God has used him in such an incredible way in this ministry, in this church, and to help get us where we're at. Church, we are blessed. We are blessed, man. God has given us an amazing team. And he's given us an amazing staff. Just people in this church. Matt and I have talked. There's the idea of what it is to move from Boulder, Colorado to a farm in Allegheny, New York, and the difference of people. Wow.
It's sunnier there.
It is sunnier there. We get the 65 days of sun here that they don't get there. Yeah. But as a church, we just want to say thank you. And there's so much that's ahead for Believer's Chapel. There's so much ahead for this congregation and for this community and for this church. And I love Matt and Lori and Addie and Hayden and Lindsay and just what they bring to the table here and what they've done. And just to hear going into Wednesday night what it means to go through a journey. And we all go through a journey. What it means to live thankful. What it really means to know the journey and to be thankful. To be thankful for the journey. That's tough at times. But what it means to live thankful. Wednesday night's going to be a special night, man. Don't miss it. We pray.